People listening to the Buddha would often say that he had brought a light into the darkness, turned upright things that had been overturned. And what they meant was that he explained to them the power of their own actions. Many of the teachings that were available in his time taught that human beings were powerless. The world was driven by forces that were beyond their control. Whereas he pointed out that the shape of your life depends on what you do, say, and think. And they would often, as a result, take refuge in him. Now, taking refuge implies, of course, that there are dangers. But there's a way to protect yourself from those dangers. This is an attitude that the Buddha called heedfulness. Seeing the dangers in life, but they can be overcome if you're careful. And his teachings were instructions on how to be very careful in how you act. Now, taking refuge in him didn't mean that he was going to come and do things for you. Simply that he had pointed out how to find true happiness, how to train yourself, so you wouldn't cause any suffering for yourself. He would say that you make yourself your own refuge. But to do that, you have to have clear guidance on what really is dangerous and what's not. And that's where we take refuge in the Buddha and the Dharma and the Sangha. They provide examples for what kind of behavior really is skillful, what kind of behavior really is heedful. We take their examples and then we bring them into our own hearts and into our own behavior. And that's how we provide protection for ourselves. Take, for instance, the three qualities of the Buddha. There's wisdom, compassion, and purity. Wisdom, he said, starts with a very simple question. What, when I do it, will lead to my long-term harm and suffering? What, when I do it, will lead to my long-term welfare and happiness? The wisdom there lies in realizing that suffering and happiness are going to depend on your actions, and that long-term happiness is possible, and it's better than short-term. It sounds pretty simple, but how many people actually live that way? There's a passage in the Dhammapada where the Buddha says, if you see there's a greater happiness that comes from abandoning a lesser happiness, the wise person will abandon the lesser happiness for the sake of the greater. There was a British translator who translated that and then added a footnote and said, this cannot possibly be the meaning of this passage. It's too simple. Well, maybe simple, but is it followed by most people? Most people go for the quick fix. They want all kinds of happiness. They want to win at chess and keep all their pieces. Whereas the Buddha realized that there are certain kinds of happiness you have to give up for the sake of the long term. Now notice, wisdom comes by searching for happiness in a way that's wise. The Buddha didn't say that searching for happiness was a bad thing, or you should be ashamed of searching for your own happiness. Simply that you have to learn how to be wise in doing that. And that's a quality that protects you. Because it's also tied to that second quality of the Buddha, compassion. You realize that if your happiness is going to last, it cannot depend on harming others. Because they see you being happy and harming them, they're going to try to put an end to your happiness. There's a story in the canon. King Basenadi, one of the Buddha's followers, is in his private apartments with his favorite queen. And in a tender moment, he turns to her and he says, is there anyone you love more than yourself? And you know what he's thinking. He wants her to say, yes, Your Majesty, I love you more than I love myself. And if this were a Hollywood movie, that's probably what she'd say. But this is the Pali Canon. You can't get away with saying stupid things in the Pali Canon. She says, no, there's nobody I love more than myself. How about you? Is there anyone you love more than yourself? The king has to admit, oh, no, there's nobody he loves more than himself. So that's the end of that scene. The king goes down and sees the Buddha and tells him about the conversation. And the Buddha says, you know, she's right. You could search the whole world over and not find anyone that you love more than yourself. But at the same time, everyone else loves themselves just as fiercely. So the conclusion he draws is not that it's a dog-eat-dog world. The conclusion is don't harm anyone or get them to do any harm. In other words, if you want to be happy in a solid and reliable way, you can't harm anybody. And you can't get them to act in unskillful ways that would lead to their own harm. And this is the basis for compassion. Realizing you can't be truly happy without taking into consideration the happiness of other people. And then there's the third quality, purity. It's nice to have nice thoughts about other people, nice thoughts about your own skillfulness. But then the question is, are you really skillful in your behavior? And this is where purity comes in. The Buddha said purity comes when you examine your actions, starting with your intentions. Before you do or say or think anything, ask yourself, this thing that I want to do or say or think, is it going to harm myself, harm others? If you foresee any harm, you don't do it. If you don't foresee any harm, you go ahead. In other words, you act only on your best intentions. Because if you act on bad intentions to begin with, then you don't learn very much. Because we're trying to make our good intentions skillful. So you start with your good intentions, and then you watch while you're doing something what kind of results are coming up while you're doing it. Because not everything saves its results for later. You put your hand in a fire, it's not going to burn in the next lifetime. It's going to burn right now. And if you see that you are harming anyone through your actions, even though you didn't expect it, you stop. If you don't see any harm, you can continue. When you're done, then you reflect on the long-term consequences of your action. And you see, this action that I did it cause any harm? If it did cause harm, you have to go and talk it over with someone who's more advanced on the path. And then you resolve. You're not going to repeat that mistake. If you see that you didn't cause any harm, the Buddha says, take joy in that fact and then continue training. And this way you make sure that your actions really are skillful. Your intentions are not just good, but they're skillful. Because for the Buddha, a well-lived life is a life that is lived as a skill. You do something, you look at the results are not good. You go back and you change what you did until you get better and better. The attitude you should have is when you do something well, you're happy about it, but you're not satisfied. You say, there must be more. Because after all, ultimately, the Buddha says, if you're really skillful, you get the mind to a place where it doesn't cause any suffering at all. If you're not there yet, he says, don't rest content, just keep on improving. But be happy to improve. If you're going to identify yourself with anything, identify with the desire to be as skillful as you can, the willingness always to learn. So this applies to our thoughts and our words and our deeds. These skills we learn as we meditate, being more mindful, being more alert, are meant to be applied in this approach to being skillful in everything you do. And approach it as a skill. The Buddha said the Dharma is nourished by commitment and reflection. You commit yourself to doing it as well as you can, and then you reflect on the results. This is how the Buddha himself learned. When the results are not good yet, well, then you go back and you change what you did. When the results are good, okay, you take that as a sign that you really are mastering this skill. So we can live in the world in a way that is wise and compassionate and pure. And that's how you become your own refuge. You take these qualities of the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, and you apply them and develop them in your own heart and mind, in your own activities. So the skills of the meditation are an important part of this. Because after all, you want to get to know your intentions really well. And a good way to do that is to set up a good intention to begin with. The intention, say, to stay with the breath or whatever your concentration object is. And see what you need to do in order to maintain that intention with a sense of ease, with a sense of well-being. That's why the skills that the Buddha taught become your skills. like the skill of working with the breath. The Buddha talks about how it's important to breathe in a way that gives rise to well-being, and then allow that sense of well-being to spread to the body. He doesn't explain how. It's up to you to exercise your ingenuity to figure that out. And John Lee, who was my teacher's teacher, discovered that if you thought of the breath not just as the air coming in and out through the nose, but as the energy flowing through the body, and you breathe in ways that feel good, then that energy flowing through the body will take those good feelings and spread it throughout. And this is something he learned on his own, observing his own actions. It was actually when he was off in the forest and had a heart attack, had no medicine. He'd walked 3 days into the forest. He was going to walk out. He's going to walk back out. And he discovered that if he worked with his breath energies, he could bring his health back and get the mind into good, strong states of concentration. So that's one way in which he committed himself and reflected, committed himself more and reflected. And he shared the results of his reflections. We can benefit from that. But each of us will have to do our own commitment as well, our own reflections as well. And this way we can carry the skill of the meditation, carry the skills of the Buddhist teachings into everything we do. Approach every activity as a skill to be mastered, one in which no one is harmed. And that way we can find the end of suffering. That's how the Buddha did it. That's how we can do it too.